Hey Podders, welcome to episode 93 of CosPod, the podcast for all things cosplay. We are getting close to that episode 100.
Yay! Applause, applause.
It will be epic when we hit episode 100. We hope to have some pretty darn special things for you guys. But also, on that note, just a reminder, if you guys would like to record messages for us to play on the show, just, you know, congratulations, happy 100th, we hope you have many more. You can record either audio or video. Please send them to us at podcast@cospod.org. Also, if you have suggestions for what you'd like to see on that 100th episode, as long as it's family friendly, we will generally take the suggestion. So if you want us to interview anybody in particular, if you want to see certain techniques that you wouldn't normally see on the show, please feel free to ask. No, we can't promise that we'll get everything that you want, but we will try.
If you want Amber to set something on fire, maybe we can do it this time.
Within reason.
Within reason.
I have to plan for such things, one, because safety first, and two, because I don't want to set off my smoke detector.
Just feeding
my insurance would not like it very much. Yes. Yes, I know.
Explosions.
Well, segue into cosplay updates.
Hey, there you go. You like that
segue? Speaking of lighting things on fire, I went to Harbor Freight on July 4th, and I got an industrial soldering gun. It heats up to 1,135 degrees Fahrenheit in 12 seconds. So, yes, this can light things on fire.
I feel like I need to have a sound effect that goes, ooh, ah.
It was on sale, and they also had an additional coupon, which is usually when I only go to Harbor Freight, is when they're having a big sale, and or they have a decent coupon. So this ended up being $12 for the industrial version, and it comes in a nice hard box. I will do an official unboxing of this when I actually have something to solder. But the good news is, it comes with solder, it comes with flux, and it comes with two separate tips. So I can always change out tips if they get too corroded. So that was one of my purchases at Harbor Freight, along with some new sanding pads for my mouse sander, because there's never, ever enough sanding in the cosplay world.
Ever, need more sanding.
Yeah, always a need for more sanding, which at some point I will stop sewing and go back to prop making. But for now, I've just had a metric boatload of sewing. But I also found this, if you can actually see that. This is a new mold from Mod Podge. This is in their Mod Melts line. These are their silicone molds that you're supposed to use with Mod Melts, which are basically just plastic in a stick that you cast into these with. But the nice thing about this is that it is a gem mold, so that if you ever needed gems for those nice cosplays and you don't want to sit there and resin cast, you don't have to. You can buy the package of Mod Melt sticks. They are $7.99 for 10 sticks. You literally put them in your glue gun, and you squirt them. And you squirt them into these. And this is a faceted mold. It's not one of the nice smooth rounds, but I figured it would be useful because if nothing else, I can always polish off. I can grind off the facets later on. Since it's plastic, I can just use a Dremel. And then you can paint over it with spray paint, nail polish, what have you. So this was $6.99. This is in their, I guess you would call it, sculpting and casting section of the store. It's where they keep all of the different clays and their adhesives. So that's where you'll find this. Also, if you don't want to cast anything at all, I didn't buy a set because I don't need them, but Mod Podge also sells glass gem rounds. They use them for basically decoupage so that you can put photos behind them and make them into pendants and paperweights and such. But they come in a pack of six. I believe they are $5.99 for that pack of six. And they are generally about, I'd say, an inch, maybe an inch and a quarter around. They're fairly large domes. So you could use them as well if you just paint the backs for cosplay gems. A little bit on the pricey side for those. You can generally get rounds, gem rounds, in bulk for cheaper than that. But they're glass, so they'll last forever. Unless you drop them.
I am very much an advocate of the Mod Melt. I've used it on my Amidala costume for the wonderful egg ear things. Most recently, I used it on my Fu costume. You probably won't notice it on my armor at all because it all looks like it connects. But yeah, I have Mod Melts on my freaking armor, and it did just fine in the Texas heat. So I support Mod Melt.
Mod melts are not hot glue. Just so that you guys understand, Mod melts are a different kind of plastic. Hot glue is also thermoplastic, if you didn't know. But Mod melts are a different kind of plastic. It is harder than hot glue, and it tends to take a lot longer to set. It's not instant like you would expect hot glue to be, even high temp. So you use it like hot glue, but it's a lot harder. It's typically used for jewelry making. Mm-hmm. That's how they advertise it. So the
you
only
get
other
cool update, jewels from it.
The only other update I have is that I've been sewing forever, and you can see the sheen. This is the velveteen upholstery I've been working with that my lining keeps sliding off of. But this is actually the final skirt panel. I finally finished top stitching.
Yay!
And making look nice. It's all, you know, nicely bag lined and everything. So everything is now ready for final assembly on my duster. All I have to do is stitch the skirt panels to the bodice, which is hanging up, and then the duster is done. Unless I want to sit here and do more fancy puffy paint on the front skirt panels, which I kind of feel obligated to do at this point because there is so much puffy paint. But later in the show, we're actually going to show you how to turn fancy, fancy puffy paint into fancy, fancy embroidery.
It's a really fun and easy technique that anybody can do. Cheesy smile.
That is the end of my cosplay updates. Unfortunately, I couldn't do much else over the holiday weekend because I worked all weekend, so it wasn't really a holiday for me. I didn't have time to do much except run to Harbor Freight and Michaels. Michaels didn't have friendly plastic. Ugh, I am so mad. I was going to make Warbler Pie for you guys next episode, but Michaels does not carry friendly plastic in their stores anymore, if they ever did. So I may actually try and use Mod Melts to make Warble Pie, mostly to prove a point. You can do it. Incidentally, you can do it because I believe Mod Melts are PLA and friendly plastic is PCL.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, they are not the same plastic, but they are similar enough that I think you could get a similar effect with it. I actually don't know if you can remold Mod Melts. I think you can. If you reheat, I think you can.
Right. I could test. It couldn't hurt to test. I've got plenty
we
of
must
it.
Do this for science now.
Yeah. I got plenty of things I don't mind destroying and heating up, so I could try it, see what happens. Couldn't hurt.
I mean, even if you just did like a little squiggle across some wax paper.
Right.
And then took a hairdryer to it and just reheated it on the wax paper.
That's what I was thinking. Yeah. If not, I could always hold it very carefully over my stovetop.
No, I'll tackle it if I need to. I have a heat gun. I have sticks. And I have a Michaels nearby that carries. Actually, Joanne's now, I believe, carries the sticks as well.
Oh, really? Ooh.
So I think I can get them from both now.
My coupons are going to be very much abused at Joanne's then, because I have a ton of them that I don't really use anymore since my fabric purchases all go to online sources now.
See, I seem to remember it was either Joanne's or Hobby Lobby. One of the two of them now carries the Mod Melt sticks. Although, guys, if you're going to cast these things, if you expect to paint the backs, you have to get the clear Mod Melts. You can't get the frosted beach glass ones because otherwise
don't get the frosted.
Yeah. They're great if you're going to paint over them, like with nail polish, but if you're just going to paint the backs, you got to get the clear stuff.
Joann's carries it. Fire Mountain carries it. Walmart carries it.
Not all Walmarts do.
Not all of them.
Yeah, it's on a local basis. You guys can always check your local stores to see if they carry the Mod Melt sticks. They're very useful sticks. You can probably, even if you wanted to actually cast with them, you could probably put them in a boiler bag like you use to make wax candles and then stick it in boiling water. I would not recommend putting this in a double boiler because it will harden on your double boiler. Use boiler bags. And then you literally just pour it into the mold just like you would resin. It's also a lot less volatile than resin. It is still hot. Do not stick your finger in it. But if you want to speed the cooling process, you can stick the mold in your refrigerator or freezer to speed it up. Just saying. I've done a review of Mod Melts before. It's in one of our previous episodes.
It is, and it was a fantastic review. I'm just thinking, I can't remember the name of the freaking plastic, but they come in little beads. You can get them at cosplay supplies, and it's a great way of smoothing out Warblow, not Warblow, Wonderflex. And you basically do it the same way as where you put it into a boiler bag. You stick it into a
That is
pot
friendly
on.
plastic.
Is it friendly plastic?
Yes, it goes by several trade names. You
Okay.
can also get it as Instamorph. You can get it as Shaplock. You can get it as friendly plastic. I know there's a couple of others that I'm missing off the top of my head. If you go online to search for friendly plastic via Amazon or eBay, it's generally called Instamorph. Overseas, they call it Shaplock.
I'm Googling now. It is friendly
Granted,
plastic. Okay.
yeah. That's what they sell it as here. They'll sell it under the company Amoco.
Right. Okay.
Because I totally didn't research this
No, of
long and
course not.
hard.
Not at all.
Now, before Warblepie came around, probably a good 6 months before Warblepie hit the internets, I have been searching for a way of making Warblow like that. And I mean, to an extent, you can do it with friendly plastic, but even then, it's still not economical yet. It's really not, because friendly plastic, it's economical if you live overseas, because PCL is generally not manufactured here in the States. Just like Warblow, we have to import it. And because we have to import it, they tack on customs taxes, and that's why it's so expensive here in the States. If we actually manufactured it here, just like Warbler, Warblepie would be a lot more economical. I mean, if I wanted to mix plastic with a filler, you can take pretty much any thermoplastic. You can take sintered, you can take styrene, you can take PVC. You can put it in a little bath with acetone. Please, for the love of God, wear a respirator if you do this. And it will liquefy the plastic, and then you can just add a filler, and then it becomes pasty, and then you just sit there and
Right.
write it like Bondo. This makes a very toxic smell. Safety first, kids. Please ventilate if you're going to do that. It's actually a well-known method of fusing the ends of styrene together is you take a little nail polish brush with acetone, and you just lightly paint the edges. And you can fuse them together. Alternatively, you can also use that if you need to bind two plastic pieces together permanently. You cannot rip them apart because it is a chemical bond. But you just paint each side with acetone, kind of like you would with barge, and you just, and that's it. Good stuff, science kids. You never thought it could be used for cosplay and costumes, but it sure as heck can.
Same with math.
Measure twice, cut once.
Oh, evil, evil math. Okay, I guess it's my turn for cosplay updates, huh?
It has been.
And we
I've
started
been
talking
filling
about this.
time.
But this is the fun part. This is why people watch us, is because we do this interesting little banter back and forth, and we sometimes go off
Science.
science and math. Speaking of math, I actually have been doing quite a bit of math. I've been in the process of remaking my Sailor Mercury costume. And in that, I have had to completely redo my leotard pattern, which required a ridiculous amount of math, because not only was it just redesigning the pattern, I had to fit it for spandex. I initially made this pattern to work with jersey fabric because a number of the tutorials out there for Sailor Scouts have been, use jersey, use jersey. Okay. Jersey doesn't have as much strength or stretch as spandex. And oh, hey, I'm going to flip over to Amber real quick. Hey!
This is the magical thing that everybody's been looking for. If you guys are looking for this pattern, this is the Sailor Scout Fugu pattern. Hobby Lobby and Joann's both have this in their stores physically now.
Yay!
I've noticed that not every craft store does, but
Right.
Hobby Lobby and Joann's chain stores do carry
They
this
do.
pattern. In fact, they carry quite a few. Did I pick up one of the other ones? This is another one that wasn't advertised.
Yes, I saw that one too. I was
See, not a
really
lot of people
tempted.
have seen this online,
Right.
but this is another useful one that you could use for several different kinds of costumes, especially crossover costumes, because it has a base and then it has a corset separate along with accessories that are separate. So this is also, a really handy pattern to have. And they also have a Doctor Who ball gown style set of patterns, one for the TARDIS and one for a Dalek. I didn't pick that one up, but also Hobby Lobby and Joann's both have that physically in their stores. The only pattern they don't have when I went was mm-hmm. the Yaya Han bodice pattern.
Oh, okay.
Because I did specifically look for that one. They do not have it in stock yet.
Okay. And I know that they also carry the DC Batman villain girls. Like they have Harley Quinn and then a spin off of Poison Ivy. So those are kind of cute too. I was really tempted because again, I ain't a pattern person, but the fact that they're making these type of costuming patterns, it's like, I kind of want one. Will I ever use it? I don't know. I'm still debating on if I'm going to use the Game of Thrones one, so you know. Well,
you're certainly making this Sailor Scout without the official pattern.
Yeah, exactly. And the reason I'm not is because that thing has too many flipping seams on it. It's completely inappropriate. So anyway, yeah, math. I've had to do a lot of it to make up for the fact that I have a fabric that's not only stronger than jersey, but has a greater stretch to it in multiple directions. So that means I had to take in quite a bit in order to get the pattern to fit me properly. And it's been interesting use of algebra and some trigonometry that I never expected to use in oh so many years. I was just hoping that I could retrace my old pattern, just kind of adjust it a bit. Yeah, no, I had to make a brand new pattern. It sucked. But I'm really, really happy at how well this baby fits me. I still have to do a lot of cleanup work on it. And it looks really awkward right now. I will post pictures of it on my dress form. This thing fits me like a glove. It is like ideal in every freaking way. And I'm incredibly proud of myself for completely just tearing this thing apart and remaking it to fit into a Sailor Scout pattern. So yay, I'm so happy. And I have super poofy sleeves. Squish, squish, super poofy. And then the other things that I have been working on, other than the enormous amounts of shoulder and glove rolls, it's just going to be going on a secondary Sailor Scout outfit that I will talk about at a future time when it's a little bit more complete. Finally got all my skirts done. Yay! So I don't know if many of you can see this, but I've got horsehair braid hanging in underneath this. It's obviously very white. Horsehair braid doesn't come in a whole lot of colors, and the few sellers who have it in different colors want a lot of money for it. I'm cheap. I'll take the white. We'll just deal with it in Photoshop. It's fine. But this is the new trend with a lot of skirts for Sailor Scouts is using horsehair braid. You basically end up pleating the top of it so you still get the nice crisp pleats. And then you do the ends in horsehair braid so that when you wear it, it kind of gives this interesting floofy effect and it keeps everything nice and straight at the same time. I've seen it on a couple of costumes. I thought it looked really nifty. So I wanted to give this a shot. And I'm incredibly surprised at how much I love these skirts now. And I hate skirts. I detest wearing skirts, but I want to wear these all the time now. So yeah, I've got two of them that I'm working on at the same time. I figured if I'm remaking Mercury, I may as well get my other Sailor Scout out of the way. Wow, this one's in black. I have to iron down. Woo, hello, Fuzzy. I have to iron down the horsehair braid on this one. But otherwise, I'm so happy and so proud. And there's fluff everywhere because I've had to stuff things for the last 2 weeks. You'd be surprised at how much trouble it is to stuff shoulder rolls and hip rolls. It takes a long time because you want your seams to be even, and that's the fastest way to get your seams to be uneven. I have fluff everywhere. So yeah, that's been my project for the past 2 weeks, and now that I've gotten so far in all of these, I'm hopeful that I can get both of these costumes done by the end of the month. That way I can spend next month working completely on Tentacruel for Dragon Con and be a happy camper afterward.
I am genuinely shocked as I think about this.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't people use cording for the inside of their sleeves instead of stuffing? It would be so much more even and faster because then you sew it like piping.
It depends on the cording because I find unless you get something that's thick enough or you're able to, I don't know, it doesn't look right to me. It doesn't look right to me.
Because even if you took that and sewed a single layer of batting around it to obscure the braid mm-hmm. texture, which even then, unless you sew really tightly around it, you wouldn't get much of the braiding texture anyway. So you just get a thick white braid cording from the store and then just stitch around it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, it'd be worth something to look into. I don't know. I've seen people try it and they either end up with one or two issues. You can tell it's braiding and it doesn't give that floofy look. And the second thing is that it ends up adding weight to the fabric, so it starts to droop a
It
little
can.
bit. Yeah, you don't want the shoulders to droop. You want them to be poofy and out like they're supposed to be in weird magical girl land. But it'd be something to be look into at least. Maybe there's another alternative to that.
Because I know I saw at Walmart they sell mesh fabric tubes in the kids
Right.
section that you could just again sew a single layer of batting around it, just like you would cording, and just stick it in there. And it would hold its shape too because it's mesh. It's those weird things that you see when people have dreadlocks, the colored mesh tubing.
Right,
Yeah.
right.
It's like, what the heck could I use this for anyway?
It's
I've done that,
definitely
right?
an option.
I go up and down the kids sections and I look at all of the crafty things they have for kids now. They have LED shoelaces.
Yeah, what's up with that?
In fact, it ends up looking more like EL wire. It looks like a miniature EL wire kit, and I think it's $5 a shoe. It may even be $5 a pair. I couldn't tell through the packaging, but if you ever wanted a really easy piece of EL wire for your costume or LEDs for your costume, go look in the toys section. You can get these pre-made almost kits where they've done everything for you. You just put in the battery and press the switch. Man, they have it so easy nowadays.
Right. And actually, what's so funny is I've noticed that Folk Art and another one of the painting companies now have these little like Da Vinci kits where you actually get full tubes of their freaking paint for half the price. And if you bought the bottle separately, so you can get like five or six of them in one little bundle. And I'm like, why am I buying the tubes separately? Give me the tubes where I've got six of them. I may only use three, but the other three, I'll use them eventually. I'm a paint hoarder. So, I mean, kids, that you guys have it so easy. Oh my goodness.
Get off my
How dare you?
Not that old yet. We're not that
Well, I did post that Blockbuster picture earlier. That did not make me feel any younger.
old. I saw that.
The end is nigh.
Oh, I did find something else that was kind of nifty that I just happened upon in Instructables. There's something called ELI. That's, Echo Lima, India. ELI glow powder. It is a pigmented powder that you mix with resin, and it makes your items glow in the dark.
Oh yeah, I've heard of
Like you
this. I didn't know what it
charge
was
them.
called.
You charge them with natural light. So if you're, say, standing outside, it doesn't have to be any special kind of light. You don't have to charge it with UV light or black light or anything. Just
Right.
natural, regular light. And apparently, this stuff has an infinite life on it to where it doesn't fade over time. And the glow is really bright. It is
Interesting.
really bright. And it's $5 for a little jar of pigment that goes pretty darn far if you're mixing it with resin. When you mix it into the resin, it is clear, so it does not dye the resin any particular color. You can always add dye, but you mix it in, it's clear. And then the example that they showed was that they did cutouts out of foam. They did EVA foam, and it almost looked like runes the way they had just cut out these little gaps, and then they filled in the gaps with the resin. And so in the dark, you could just see these glowing runes. It was really cool.
That's cool.
So
I
if you
didn't know that
ever
that's what it
needed,
was called.
ELI, I believe, is simply the company that carries it, this
Okay.
particular kind of glow powder. If you simply look up luminescent or glow powder, generally you can find other companies that carry it, but I haven't seen any that glow as brightly in the pictures as ELI's. And like I said, they are an overseas company, but if you go on Etsy, they sell it domestically here in the States so that you don't have to pay the overseas shipping. And it's $5 for a little pigmented jar. And they have several colors. I really liked cobalt blue myself.
I'm Googling and I'm like, oh, okay, that's what the stuff is.
Yeah,
I'm
if you don't want to use
curious.
LEDs or EL wire, this is really neat looking stuff.
I wonder if you could incorporate it into the cleared Mod Melts.
Probably.
I'm
It's
curious.
not specific to resin because there isn't exactly a chemical interaction.
Sure,
It resin
yeah.
is just a carrier.
Right.
So I would imagine any kind of clear liquid, I mean, even hot glue could probably carry it. Ooh, that would be neat.
Ooh, ideas, ideas. I like this. Yeah,
You could probably even, it would be a little more expensive to do it this way because you'd have to be a lot more careful with it since the powder isn't exactly, you can't waste it because you don't have very
right.
much of it. But you could probably even just draw out your designs in hot glue, you know, your squigglies, and then sprinkle the powder on top of it, just like you would powdered sugar on a cake, and then let it set. You'd have to save all the excess powder that comes off that way to keep sprinkling it, but cool stuff, man.
Science is very awesome.
I like science.
Science is cool.
Science makes my cosplays better.
Oh, goodness, on that note.
All right, so we have an interview for you guys with the lovely Atelier Heidi. She was kind enough to give us her time to sit down and talk with us both about her cosplay portfolio and about SGC, Screw Attack Gaming Convention. So we will go ahead and present that to you guys for your viewing pleasure. Hey Potters, we've got a special interview for you guys today. We have our guest with us, Miss Heidi.
Hello.
He's been a cosplayer for a long time and has developed a lot of talent and a lot of technique, and we wanted to talk with her about it. So, Heidi, if you would, tell people a little bit about what got you into cosplay and what you are known for.
Thank you very much for having me on. I first got into cosplay because I started going to conventions. I was working at a game store and I was really interested in gatherings for nerds to make some friends. And so I started going to conventions and I was really fascinated by the cosplayers that I would see there. And I started taking photos. And I never really developed as a photographer, but I was really driven to start making costumes. So I started actually making costumes a couple of years ago. And since then, I think the ones that are probably best known for are Asuka from Neon Genesis Evangelion, who's one of my favorite people to cosplay. And just recently I made an Asuna costume, similar names from Sword Art Online. And so, yeah, those are my bigger ones.
And we have also known you as being somewhat famous for doing an internship with God Save the Queen Fashion Store. I saw those work in progress pictures. That was some awesome stuff, man.
Well, thank you very much. I just started doing leather work when I started working there because that's what she needed me to do. She wanted to give me kind of a basic overview and a number of different skills, and leather work was a big one that her shop is really well known for. And so, of course, that was one of the things that I was most interested in learning from her because she's one of the best. So it was great.
And then I believe you took that work and used it in one of your latest costumes that you just displayed at Akon.
Yes. So this past Akon, I made a new costume for my husband to wear, and I wore an older costume that I had made during my internship with God Save the Queen. And so we competed together with another friend, April of Azure Props, and the three of us did a Vagrant Story group and entered the contest and had a lot of fun, and we won second place advanced. And so it's just great when all of your hard work pays off like that.
How did you get Jared to wear that thing?
Lots
It still
of
boggles
begging and pleading. I
me.
said, please, I really want to bring this character to life because it was a game that has been really close to my heart for a number of years. So I wanted to make this particular character, and I thought that he would be good for modeling it. And finally, he agreed so that we would have something new for me to add to the group because I had made my costume before, like several months before. So I wanted to be working on something fresh to debut for the contest. And so that was his costume. And yeah, it was really great. And he ended up having a lot of fun. So he's glad that he did it in the end.
Okay, good. That's always important because I figured he'd probably start freaking out because all the abs were showing.
Well, we painted some on.
And of course, we know firsthand seeing all the in progress pics how much time and effort you spent on that costume. So
Yes.
we'll show the Potter's pics so that they can see exactly what we're talking about
Thanks.
and just how awesome these turned out.
And I did have some help with the work just in order to get it done in the amount of time that I had. I had my good friend Lauren Moore, which you met at ACON as well. And so she helped cutting and doing edges and stamping and a lot of those kinds of tasks for the leather. And also I made Jared help. I did all the sewing work and I did all the pattern making, but I definitely had help in putting things together. So we made it.
Do you have any upcoming costumes that you're working on now?
Yes. I'm working on actually another costume with Jared, sort of. So he is a dateable character in an upcoming, like, fan-made dating slash visual novel type game where you can date any of the members of Normal Boots. And so he's a dateable character in that game, so I'm cosplaying as the protagonist who gets her chance to date all of the Normal Boots guys, and then I'm making a school jacket for him, so he's really just dressing up as this anime version of himself. It's actually really cute, but that's just something fun that we're working on. And aside from that, I don't have any serious costumes in the works right now. We'll see what I want to do once this is over, but right now I'm just kind of focused on my next convention, so...
Awesome. Now, so you're really big into leather working. What kind of got you into that? What inspired you to really dig into it?
Well, I got my start when I was learning from Kathy at God Save the Queen, and so I wanted to continue with what I had learned from her and try different things with it. So just wanting to branch into that because I think it's such a useful material that is really overlooked or people haven't really explored what it can do to its full potential in cosplay. So I've been wanting to do more leather-type armor and things like that to show other cosplayers, essentially, that this is a material that is available to you. I think it's a lot more durable and more cost-effective than a lot of the thermoplastics that people are investing in. Once you have all of the tools, it's not really more expensive than that, but it is a lot more durable. I think makes up for it because you have the costume for a lot longer.
Speaking of that convention that you're getting into,
right,
would you like to talk a little bit about SGC and what that stands for?
Yes, SGC is, actually they just call it SGC now, but it's from Screw Attack, the video game entertainment website. Screw Attack Gaming Convention was the original name of it. It is an upcoming video game convention here in Dallas, and it's always a lot of fun every year. They have a lot of video game guests and YouTubers will come out, a lot of online content as well. They stream their panels. They've got a really big variety of guests this year. I think they have the whole voice cast from Dragon Ball Z and a number of large YouTube names. But yeah, they have a cosplay contest there, and that is next weekend, the 17th through the 19th. The contest is going to be on Saturday, and there's a $500 grand prize for the first place winner. So if anybody has costumes that they haven't competed in, you should definitely come out and give it a shot.
Now, see, I haven't attended before, so this is like actually my first time going, even though I'll be there as staff. Just looking at the past years of the cosplay contest, it's like, wow!
Yeah.
It is like big and bold, and I was really surprised for SGC.
We have some really awesome winners in the past, so I've been very impressed with the costumes that have been there for the last 2 years, and I'm really excited to see what is new this year.
Is this something where anyone can enter?
Yes. We have some entries that are still available. You can register on site on the day of. Pre-judging starts 2 hours before the contest, and you'll be assigned a specific time to come in for pre-judging where you will actually talk to the judges, show off your costume in detail, and talk about what you made because it's primarily a craftsmanship contest. And from there, there's a staged portion where we watch you walk across the stage and see kind of your presentation, and all of that together is accounted for in the judging.
Val, I believe you have the magical questions we have for the cosplayer interview.
Oh, yes. We always have magical questions that we get every single time. They're fun, I promise.
All right.
All right, go for it.
Okay, so first off, what is your favorite material to work with? And I have a feeling it's going to be leather.
It is leather, But, like, are you talking about, like, fabric or just material in general?
Any material. It can be a tool. It can be fabric. It can be whatever you want it to be. What is your favorite thing to work with?
It is leather, actually. I've had a lot of fun making the sets of armor that I've made recently and other small accessories and things like that. Those are my favorite parts to make on costumes. And leather is so versatile. I get to exercise a lot of different techniques with it.
Okay, and then on the opposite end, what's your least favorite material to work with?
My least favorite material... That's tough, because the things that I really hate working with, I just don't work with anymore. I guess vinyl, like crappy, like sticky pleather and things that you have to work through your machine, which I guess I've kind of graduated past, and I have other ways to work around that now. But yeah, probably that. Of course, one of the next costumes I want to make is another plug suit, which would be vinyl. So
yeah, more of that lovely four-way stretch vinyl that likes to stick to itself. Yay.
My favorite.
Not so fun. Okay, if you could give any one piece of advice to news cosplayers, what would it be?
Being meticulous. Only some people are really interested in developing as a costumer, like not just for fun and dressing up and going to conventions, but for really improving your skill and pursuing this as a craft. Be meticulous and just pay attention to what you're doing and work hard. And that's really all it takes, because sewing isn't difficult. It's something that anyone can learn, but primarily you just have to try really hard and you have to care. And so, yeah, try hard and care.
All right, and this is actually a new question. Is there any one thing that you think cosplayers should learn or should know? I know it's a big question.
Yeah, I would say, like, it's okay to be, like, to feel competitive and to be also be intimidated by people and to, like, I think that people get jealous of each other in the community when instead of doing that, they should be turning that into friendships so that they can learn from each other and benefit. In that way, I feel like there's a lot of cattiness and just people who are really concerned about like feeling inferior or superior to other people and like asserting themselves in that way. When like that's just so pointless. Like if someone is better than you, you should try to be friends with them so that they'll help you and then you'll learn and everybody will be better and it'll be awesome. So yeah, that's what I would say. Sorry,
that's
kind of a roundabout answer.
No, that's a really great answer. I like it a lot.
Thanks. Other than that, I wanted to ask if you have a favorite of the costumes that you've made.
Ah, yeah, of course. We always have to ask that one.
My favorite costume is always changing, so I'll probably say it's something else. I liked wearing my plug suit a lot when I had it, but I still feel like my favorite that I just always have the most fun in is Verona, because she's just like really cute and it's comfortable and easy to wear and I get to carry cool props now. So yeah, that's probably my favorite costume overall.
Glowing props.
Glowing props. So I feel magical when I have it.
Well, that is all I have. So unless, Val, you have anything else?
No, other than I'm looking forward to SGC as a first-timer. This should be fun.
Yay! I'm looking forward to hanging out with you there.
Yay!
So. Thanks so much.
Work, that's okay.
You'll have fun, too, I hope.
Oh, yeah, I'm sure I will. I'm a big gaming nerd anyway, so it'll be fine.
So we would encourage all of the Potters, please consider attending SGC from July 17th through the 19th. Please consider participating in the cosplay contest. Even if this is your first time, we still always encourage you guys to compete. Go ahead and
Absolutely.
Walk the stage proudly. Enjoy your costuming experience. And we would also like to thank Heidi for joining us on the show today. Thank you so much for giving us your time.
Yay!
Thank you so much for having me.
And we're back.
Jazz hands. Yay. Thank you again, Heidi, for interviewing with us. We know you're very, very busy, so we really appreciate you taking the time to interview. That was really, really cool of you.
Yep, and hopefully those of you who are going to SGC, we hope you guys have a wonderful time. I know that Val will be there helping out with the cosplay contest.
Mm-hmm.
Unfortunately, I have to work, and so I cannot be at SGC, but I wish you guys all the fun in the world and wish I could be there.
Be sure to stop by and say hi. I don't know if I'll be dressed up as anything. I may just be in normal mode. But if I have the energy to dress up, I'll pick something really easy so you can spot me.
Because I have to work such long hours into the evening, I won't even have time to stop by because it's such a long drive, and then I'd have to drive all the way back to the office.
Yeah, like, so not to worry. It is what it is. It is what it is.
So if you would like to go ahead and introduce your tutorial.
Absolutely, madam. So today I decided to finally make you guys an embroidery tutorial. I've been wanting to do this for a while, and this past week Facebook kind of exploded amongst cosplayers with this interesting new technique about how to use puffy paint to do embroidery. So I thought this was a great time for me to not only show you traditional hand embroidery skills, but how to do the puffy paint technique. So enjoy. So we've gone over hand sewing and basic stitching to help with seams and hems. Now we're going to move on to some of the fancier stuff, which is embroidery. Embroidery is a technique of using thread or floss to create a design or add an embellishment to a garment. The effect does take a lot of time, but it can turn any costume into a work of art. Even little touches of it can add volume of detail to a costume. So for this tutorial, I'm going to cover a couple of stitches and how they work to create an overall design. Here are the things that you're going to need. You'll need your embroidery floss, which you can pick up at any craft store. If you're doing this for a costume, I don't recommend cheaping out on the floss. Get the nice stuff that you can get in the bins. Don't get those combo packs. Scissors to cut said floss. Stabilizer, and this is to act as your backing for the fabric so your floss won't pinch or pull the fabric and allow you to work with different types of fabric with relative ease. You can use an iron-on version or you can use the one that you can stitch in. It's your call, but the one that I prefer to use is an iron-on just so I don't have to worry about slipping. You need an embroidery needle, and you'll notice with these needles they have a pin-like head that's much thinner than the others, and this allows for easier passage of the floss through the fabric without creating large holes. Of course, you will need your fabric, and when you create the design, you can either do it directly onto your fabric, or you can do it like an applique where you can put it onto organza or something similar, cut it out, and then stitch it onto your final form. You will need also a tailor's chalk, a paint pen, some form of a stencil, basically some type of a marking tool that won't bleed on the fabric so you can create your design. I would strongly encourage using a stencil if you're a first timer and you don't feel confident in freehanding it. Another option is with puffy paint, and that's something that I'm going to talk about a little bit later in this tutorial. The final thing that you're going to need is your embroidery hoop, and this is to help keep your fabric taut to prevent bunching while you stitch. Your first step is going to be preparing your fabric. Make sure to iron it and remove any creases and wrinkles. And if you have any iron-on stabilizer, this is the time that you will want to use it. Once you're done ironing and you have the stabilizer secure, add the fabric to your embroidery hoop. You need the fabric to be tight enough to look flush and wrinkle-free. After that, this is when you stencil on your design. You can freehand it, which is what I'm doing, but that's completely up to you and how comfortable you feel with marking on the fabric. Stick with an outline and don't fill in the entire project. It's less chalk and paint that you have to cover, and it's easier to wash out in the end. And as you can see, I am using a paint pen. It's not a real pen. This particular one I like to use because it doesn't bleed on the fabric and it doesn't cause any excess or stray strokes. It's just very neat and clean. If you're painting on a design, let it dry and check the directions to see if it needs to be heat set with an iron. Make sure to take it out of the embroidery hoop before you heat set. And please use fabric paints. Do not use acrylics. Acrylics will chip off and cause extra weight to the fabric, thus altering its movement and its flow. With the floss, you'll notice that it separates into smaller threads. Typically, a floss is made up of 6 strands of threads, all tightened and coiled up together. What I like to do is take the full floss out of its packaging, measuring out how much I need, which for me is usually anywhere between 3 to 4 yards, and then I just cut as much as I need. Now keep in mind you're going to be doubling over the thread like with hand stitching, so make sure to cut out extra to make up for this. And then what I'll do is I will separate the strands out into sets of 2. It's just because it's easier to separate the floss this way when it's all coiled up like that. Once I separate the 2 pieces, I get out 1 single strand of thread, and then I stick it through the needle and then have it doubled over. Now with embroidery, you do not need to knot the end. There's actually a trick on how to knot it while you're doing the stitching, and it keeps the back clean and flat. Now we're ready to start the stitching. I find it's easier to do the outline first and fill in your shape afterwards so you don't overstep any of the pre-designed boundaries. Since we haven't knotted the end, I'm going to show you how to do one through the embroidery. Pass the needle through from the wrong side of the fabric and pull up. Don't pull up all the way because remember, we don't have it knotted. You want to leave about a third of an inch of floss underneath before you take the next set of stitches and push it on through. And then you're going to press the needle back through the fabric in a line along your stencil mark. Again, not all the way. And I'm going to flip over and show you. Now we're going to pass it through again. This time, I'm going to go through my first stitch about halfway into it and between the two strands of floss, but I'm not going to pull all the way. As you can see, I have a little loop here. I'm going to open it up a bit, and that third strand of floss that I left over, I'm going to slide it through the hoop and then pull tightly, and it'll help secure it into place. And then I'm going to pass the needle through the top back to the bottom again. And then we're going to do this one more time by pressing the needle up and parting the two strands of threads. I'm not going to pull it all the way through just yet. I'm going to use the remaining strands of the floss to push it through that small hoop and then pull tight. And then that's it. That'll help lock the thread into place. But as you can see, it's on there nice and tight. You don't have to worry about the thread falling apart or falling off. It's just going to hold right where you want it. So the first stitch I'm going to show you is the stem stitch. This is great for borders, particularly with floral patterns and curves. You're pulling the stitch at an angle and essentially doing a back stitch underneath. You pull up the thread from the wrong side up and go across your design at an angle. You pull back down higher than your original stitch, and you just keep repeating in this diagonal pattern. And actually, as you continue looking through this, it almost has this really cool rope-like texture for it. So if you start looking at embroidery closely and you see that it looks a little bit like rope, more than likely they're using the stem stitch. And it's just as simple as going up and down, but at a diagonal. Everything's going to be done at an angle with the stem stitch. So I showed you how to do this when starting your knot, and we'll just keep going with this particular stitch. This is called the slip stitch. It's preferred stitch for any type of borders or outlines, or for adding fullness to an embroidery. You're basically parting the floss to give the illusion that you're adding much more thread than you really are. You're actually only using one strand the entire time. And it's just as simple as pulling your needle from the wrong side up, pushing it back down. Then you bring the needle back up through your original stitch in between the two sections of floss. You're parting the floss down the middle. You don't need to break the floss because you're only working with one strand that's been doubled over. You're just sliding the needle through that doubled over strand and pulling through. And then you just move to the next spot along the pattern and you keep on going. It's essentially a back stitch, but with fancier floss, and you're making a pattern along the way. You want to keep the stitches even and about a half inch of length or less. The longer the length, the less full the floss is going to seem like. If it's only like a couple of centimeters long, it's going to look much fuller. The next one is the satin stitch. It is the preferred stitch for filling in spaces, and it's going to be your best friend. And all it is are straight stitches tightly together, either at an angle or going straight across. And it's just as simple as pushing the needle through from the wrong side up to the right side and then back down and then up again and back down and up again and back down over and over again ad nauseum. All it is just a bunch of stitches really tightly together. The trick is keeping the stitches flat. It's really easy for the fabric to bunch up. And because of that, I like to rub my finger over the spot where I've just stitched it to kind of help relax the fabric and the thread every few steps so I know that it's nice and secure while keeping it flat. Now we're going to move to a fun one. It's called the French knot. And it's a great way of adding raised details to embroidery or to give a pop to flowers. You pull the thread all the way through right side up. Then what you want to do is loop your needle around the thread 2 to 3 times. Your call however you want to do it. The more times you loop, the larger your knot will be, but it will also be a lot messier and it's a little bit more difficult to keep tight. Push the needle back through the fabric as close as possible to your original hole. Now, using your other hand, you want to pull the floss tight to help the knot settle, and then you can continue passing the needle through. And as you see, I have to keep it pretty tight as I'm moving the needle, just so there isn't any excess floss trying to puff out. Otherwise, it leaves a really weird little top knot. And then you just pull all the way, and then there you go. And this last one that I'm going to show you is called the short and long stitches. It's very much like the satin stitch, but instead of using one consistent size the entire time, you're alternating between short and long stitches. If you wonder how people will get gradients to work when filling in areas, this is basically how you do it. You start with your top row with one long and then one short stitch. One long, one short. One long, one short. And you just keep repeating until you get to the end of the line. The second row is when you start doing satin stitches. So the stitches are close together and they're going to be of equal lengths. Since you started your first row as short and long, the lines down the way will also continue that pattern. So you don't need to do longer and shorter stitches, just keep the stitches of even length. As you move further into your design, you can start changing the colors. And I find that it's easier to start with the widest area and then work your way inward. It helps guide the color and it looks a little bit more seamless instead of starting small and working your way out. When you're at the end of your floss, you have to tie off the thread. The easiest way to do that is through the slip stitch, and it works very similar to how you start the knot. Pass your needle through the fabric, but don't pull it tight. Leave a bit of a gap with the loop. Move the needle through the fabric again, and then slip it through that loop. Pull tight. Repeat with another stitch and snip off the excess. Keeping the stitches short will also make it easier to tie off the ends of the floss with the least amount of hassle. Alrighty, so there was a new image that's been kind of spreading around on Facebook over the past week, and it's basically called a cosplay hack, how to use puffy paint to act as a stencil for when you're doing embroidery. And for me, I was a little surprised that people were getting like, oh my God, that's a great idea, because I've been doing this for a while, and there are a lot of pros and cons to it. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to show you how to actually do it, and it's fairly simple, and then talk a little bit about it and give you a better idea of what works with it, what doesn't work with it. So let's start off with the materials that you need. And most of the stuff that you see will be exactly the same for any type of standard embroidery. So of course, you're going to need your fabric. You're going to need an embroidery hoop. Some people say it's not necessary. I think it is absolutely necessary to have the embroidery hoop because it helps keep your fabric taut when you're doing your stitch work. You're going to need some form of stabilizer. This one in particular is sulky, but you can use any type available. You can even use heat and bond as a stabilizer. If you do so, please use the purple packaging. Do not get the red one. The red one is meant for gluing both sides of the fabric together, whereas the purple one will allow you to stitch through them cleanly, and you won't get weird glue gunk all over your needles. That's never fun. You'll need embroidery floss, and for this particular project, I recommend getting the nicer embroidery floss. Don't get those kitty combo packs, because that floss is kind of cheap and gunky. The big problem with that is you run into either the floss wearing thin after a couple of wearings and washings, or the dye running. So don't get the cheapy stuff. Get the nice embroidery floss, which is like 10 cents more. And if you save a bunch of coupons for Joann's or Hobby Lobby, you can get them even cheaper than that. Of course, you're going to need your embroidery needles. And I'm going to pull this up here so you can see it a little bit better. The embroidery needle is actually thinner and has a smaller pinhead than most other needles. And that allows you to make smaller holes in your project, so you're not junking up your fabric in the process. And then, of course, you need your scissors. Duh. When would you not need scissors? And then, of course, the most important thing of all is your puffy paint or 3D paint or any form of paint where it actually raises itself off the fabric. The first thing that you're going to want to do is take your stabilizer and attach it to your fabric. I like to do the iron-on stabilizer just so I don't have to worry about it moving and fiddling when I put it into my embroidery hoop, but it's totally up to you. And with sulky, all you do is just cut it out into a giant square, stick it onto your fabric and you use an iron to heat it up, usually about wool setting, nothing higher than that. Otherwise, you melt the stabilizer into the fabric and it comes out really bumpy and rugged and it's not so pretty. But yeah, it looks just like that, as you can kind of see the difference in texture from the muslin to the sulky. Typically, I wouldn't do embroidery on muslin because muslin is not meant to be used in this way, but I didn't have any other scrap fabric available. So guess what? You get muslin. Enjoy. But once that's done, then you go ahead and place it into your embroidery hoop, which I've done here. Aha! I know, I've already made a design. So we're going to pretend this is in the embroidery hoop because obviously this is not going to fit my 10-inch embroidery hoop. I needed a scrap piece, but assume it's in the embroidery hoop for this demonstration. And then we go into puffy paint time. Now, the reason that I put the fabric into the hoop first before I do the puffy paint is I like to keep the lines and the fabric nice and taut. And I find if I leave it flat on my table, I tend to get more wrinkles in the fabric. I know it's not, it doesn't happen very often, but I'm just so paranoid about things being straight and clean. So it's like, okay, at least if I know it's in the embroidery hoop, it's not going to slide all over the place. And then I feel so much better about everything. Cool, came out. So as many of you know, puffy paint is really, really cool, and it has a great way of making these cool 3D effects all over your fabric. Whee! As gloopy as all that is. So that's the pro to it, is that you can see exactly where you're going to be stitching when you make your pattern onto your fabric. The con is that it's paint, and it takes a long time for puffy paint to dry. It takes a long, long time. So, which is why when I do this demonstration for when the actual embroidery part, I've already made the pattern. So I could give myself an hour for everything to dry off properly. And really with this, with puffy paint, you don't want the paint to be flat. You actually want the paint to be raised. Otherwise, you have more area that you have to cover and you end up wasting more embroidery floss in the process. So just have even control and how you get the paint to come out of the tube. And this takes a lot of practice. Lots and lots of practice. So I strongly encourage people to, well, that was starting to look like icing there. Test it out on a scrap piece of fabric or cloth first before you move to your final project, just so you can ensure that you have a steady hand throughout the process. And my other recommendation is, if you're going to cover it with embroidery floss, try to get your floss to match the paint or the paint to match the floss. It can be a little bit difficult because there are a load of colors in embroidery floss. There's a decent variety in the paints, particularly in the Scribbles paint or the Tulip paints. But sometimes they have weird little quirks to them. Like this particular Scribbles paint has like a sparkle gloss, which is okay, but it means I have to put more effort into covering it and making sure my stitches are much tighter and much neater. So that way none of that sparkle comes through, because that's not what I want the thread to happen there. So just something to kind of keep in mind. And it makes it much easier if you do it that way. So if you accidentally skip a stitch, nobody can tell the difference between the puffy paint and then the embroidery floss. So like you'll have a little bit of purple here and it's like, okay, not that big of a deal. But if you use like a dark black paint. Yeah, that made sense. If you use a black paint and then a white embroidery floss on top of it, if you skip a stitch, it's gonna be very obvious that you missed a stitch. So something to keep in mind. All right, let's move this sucker out of the way. So we'll assume that 20 minutes to an hour has passed for this to dry. And we will move to, ta-da! Yay, look at the puffy paint. It's so pretty. Oh my goodness. So depending upon the paints themselves, you may need to also heat seal them to ensure that the paint doesn't fall off of the fabric. And I would just read the bottle for directions. Some of them do actually tell you to heat seal it. And that's just simply removing it from the hoop, sticking it back under the iron, and then ironing it on the other side. So not on the paint side, but on the opposite side, the side that actually has the stabilizer on it. And if you do it at a low heat for a couple of seconds, that's plenty enough to heat seal it. So not all the puffy paints need this. Some of them do. So just check the bottle for directions. If you want to be extra secure, go to the company's website and they can tell you, yes, you need a heat seal. No, you don't need a heat seal. And then as for the embroidery portion itself, this one is actually fairly self-explanatory. And one of the reasons why I think it's a good basic to have for those who are starting with embroidery, because you can only really use one type of stitch for this, and that's the satin stitch. And the satin stitch is a great way of filling large areas of a project or for creating borders. And it's simply just stitching together in tight little stitches, either up and down side by side or by doing it at an angle. And really all it is pushing the needle up, if I can get on the right side. Being consistent helps. Pushing the needle up. And then back over. And I'm going to do this a couple more times so that way you guys can see it. I'm going to try to angle this towards the camera a little bit better. Really hard when you're sitting at a weird angle. But you're literally just going up and over, covering the puffy paint as best as you can so that you don't realize, hey, it's puffy paint there. Stitching at an angle is not good. Oh my goodness gracious. There we go. And as you can see what I've already started doing on this, and it's just a line of stitches tight together to cover the puffy paint. So again, if you're just starting out with embroidery, this is a great way to learn how to do it, because the satin stitch is going to be a type that you will abuse to no end. It is the easiest way to fill in spaces, and it's the least time consuming. So you could, I mean, and literally this is just all that you do, is you just go up and down until you just fill out every section of the puffy paint area. Now, here is where I'm going to talk to you a little bit more about the pros and cons of this. Because it's so easy, anybody can learn how to do it. You don't have to be a master at embroidery. You don't have to learn a bunch of crazy stitches in order to make these cool patterns. You just need to learn how to go up and down, in and out. That's it. And make sure that the stitches are tight together. It is really that simple. But as you're going to see here, I'm going to try to show this a little bit better. Woo! All right, so the section that I've had the leaf on, you see how that looks raised? That's basically what it's going to look like on your fabric. It's going to actually pop up and out, which not many people really like with embroidery. It kind of comes off more like patches, which looks like it kind of got slapped onto the fabric instead of being one with the fabric, which if you do a normal satin stitch, it's much, much flatter. It actually looks like it belongs with the fabric. It was melded with it versus it popping up and out. So this is something where I recommend doing it for like borders, or if you have like a tabard and it has just this outline design on it where it looks like it's a little bit raised. Legend of Zelda is probably a good example of this. Totally works fine. You don't have to worry about too much effort and it still looks really clean and really nice. But if you're doing something where it needs to be like a ball gown dress, I don't know, pick your anime, that from Esther, there you go. Where you need to do a lot of filling in and there's a lot of filigree and a lot of detail work, I don't recommend doing this just because it kind of looks like you plastered on an applique versus taking the time to really sit and hand embroider without the puffy paint. And you also have to think about your paint thickness, because as you can see here, this is a much thicker puffy paint and it's going to require much more thread for me to go over and cover all of it, whereas this one is a much thinner line. Less thread is going to be involved and it won't stick out as much. So that's where practicing and taking the time to do your template to figure out, okay, how much paint do I want to let out at one go? If I make it extra thick so it stands out, you're going to have to use that much more embroidery floss to cover it up. And as I said, you really only have one stitch type that you can use for this, which is the satin stitch. If you want to do French knots, if you want to do chain stitches, if you want to do slip stitches, you really can't do it because it requires you to go through the puffy paint. And I'm going to show you. In order to make it happen. And in doing so, it just looks like a giant mess. You're not really covering up the puffy paint. You're doing it in a section down the middle. You're forgetting about all the sides. And in the process, you're gunking up your embroidery needle. These suckers are fine with little bits of glue, like in the sulky. But this was intended to help with your embroidery needles. Puffy paint's not meant for needles. Puffy paint will gunk up your needles over time. And you can only go through so many of these before you're like, do I really need to keep messing up my needles? So you really can't do the fancier embroidery stuff with the puffy paint. You're kind of stuck with the chain. Not the chain, the satin stitch. And it just gets messy and horrid over time. The other thing that I dislike about this is that I think filling it in just looks cheap when you do it with puffy paint. So if you like made this entire thing puffy paint and then you tried to fill it all in, it then starts looking like a patch and it's like, well, you should have just made it as a patch. Save yourself the time, the trouble, and the extra money on the paint. I also think that this particular method works best on medium to heavyweight fabrics, mostly because you have to consider the weight of the puffy paint and the weight of the embroidery floss. Now, I know this is going to sound really funky, but puffy paint does actually carry weight to it. So if you attach the paint onto like organza or chiffon, it will change the way that the fabric flows and how it moves. Again, I know that sounds very, very funky. If you need a fantastic example of this, I will be more than happy to post pictures of my Rydia costume. I have a piece in the front that's made out of organza where I use puffy paint to help highlight certain areas. And every time I wear it, I notice how stiff it feels by comparison to the rest of the garment. Like the spandex flows better than the organza. And that should never be the case. It's usually the other way around. But the puffy paint weighed down the fabric, so it changed the properties of it. So for something like this, medium heavyweight fabrics only, with the stabilizer, you can go lightweight to heavyweight. This is actually a medium weight, and it still feels very much like muslin. Like there's no difference between the two. So I'm not as much concerned about the stabilizer. You can go the heaviest as possible and still get the nice flow of the fabric. But with the paint itself, and you start adding all that on, you're like, you got the paint, then you got the stabilizer, then you got the embroidery floss, then you're like, okay, wait, now you've just changed the properties of the fabric. It's not going to be as pretty or as clean as it was before. You can do this on cottons, totally fine. I would recommend that you get a nice woven cotton. Don't go for the cheapy stuff at the fabric stores. Like, go for, like, lowest end, I would say, would be Kona cotton. Any lower brand than that, and you're just setting yourself up for a disaster. But yeah, that is basically it. It's fairly simple, easy process. Anybody can do it. I just recommend that you take your time. Take a scrap piece of fabric first before you decide to go nuts with your design. And in fact, you can actually draw out your design first with a tailor's chalk, or you can use a paint marker, which I love to do on fabrics. It's a great way to get a stencil on there without screwing everything up. But as you can see, it's literally just stitching up and down, back and forth, and covering up the puffy paint. Really, really simple. Anybody can do it. And if you screw up, you can always go over your mistake. Aha! So nobody's then wiser. Ha ha ha. There you go. It's just that simple.
And we have returned.
Again!
Oh, man. Like Butch Cassidy and the Sundance Kid. Who are those guys? Who just keep coming back?
Wow. I love the reference. How many people are going to get it?
You have to be our age to get this stuff.
Maybe a little bit older.
Our podcast is starting to get a certain demographic. You must be X years old to ride this ride.
Oh, goodness. Everything old is new again, that's for sure.
Something old, something new, something borrowed, something blue.
Definitely something blue, and we're both rocking blue, so we're good.
I have my Akon staff t-shirt on today, man. I'm rocking it out.
I got a tank top and I got my coffee mug. We're good.
All right. Well, this is the end of episode 93. We hope you guys have enjoyed our complete zaniness this episode.
Shenanigans.
You can catch us on all of our social media. We need to be better about our DeviantArt.
Eventually.
You can always send us a message at podcast@cospod.org. Please remember, send us your audio and video messages for episode 100, which will be showing in October. If you have any suggestions for that episode, please also send those in just so that we have time to go ahead and process them and actually do what it is that you're suggesting that we do. And also, last but not least, thank you guys so much for downloading and listening to the show and for spreading the link on our webpage. We are really starting to go worldwide at this point. It is really humbling to see all of these different people around the world listening to us. We love it. We love you guys, and we cannot thank you enough for sharing the love.
Thank you. So, lots of hearts.
Hearts to you guys. We will see you next episode in episode 94. Over and out.
Bye. See you later, guys.